Podcast. I'm Pete.
And I'm Doug.
And Doug, we actually have a couple wins, so why don't we do the game fight this week?
Let's do it. The Canucks started off the week with a 6-3 victory over the Edmonton Oilers. Nils Höglander potted his 10th goal of the season. Jack Rathbone scored his first career goal in the NHL, and Travis Hamonic also scored his first goal of the season.
Next night was the McDavid show as he hits 100 points. Canucks lose 4-3. Boyd, Grajovac, and Miller with the goals, but this one was really all about McDavid hitting 100 points in 52 games.
Next up on the schedule for the Canucks was the Winnipeg Jets. They had a 3-1 victory against the Jets. Nils Höglander continued his hot play down the stretch with his 11th goal of the season and his 12th goal of the season.
Canucks apparently played the Jets again last night and lost 5-0, and that's all I have to say about that game because it was very forgettable. Doug, you got the two wins and I got the two losses. That wasn't as much fun as I'd hoped.
I guess I got the lucky end of the straw on that one there.
Yeah, I don't know. I want a redeal there. Anyways, welcome in, folks. How's it going over there, Doug?
Good. I mean, especially right now. I woke up this morning and it was rainy and gray and cloudy, and now it's hot and sunny, and I have to have my windows in my apartment closed to get rid of all the background noise for when we're recording, and it is roasting in here.
Well, I'm in the same boat. As you know, I got three towers going up next to me. I've got all the windows closed, and it's getting warm, but I'm looking forward to going and getting out on the bike after we record this one. We're recording today. It's Wednesday, March 12th, so this will be released on Thursday. So we're recording after the back-to-backs against the Jets, obviously. And we're now looking down the barrel of, what do we got now, 5 games in 7 days or something ridiculous here?
I believe there's 5 games in 7 nights to cap off the season. It's crazy because half the league has already finished playing their games, and yet the Canucks still have 5 games remaining.
And it's not even nights. It's a bunch of afternoon games chucked in there.
Yeah. There's a game. Was it 1:30 or 2:30 start against Calgary on Saturday? I believe it is.
Yeah, the Canucks have 3 afternoon games out of the 5 remaining games, Saturday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. The NHL's tucked them in before the primetime games where nobody will notice them, just to complete this season and mercifully end it for all Canucks fans so we can start looking forward to what will be an eventful offseason.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, who knows if there's a lot that's going to happen. Regardless, I do think it is going to be a really big offseason. Obviously, you have the Hughes and Petey contracts, the Green situation, whether or not the Canucks are going to retain his services. Will Benning still have a job heading into next year? There's a lot. There's a lot right now with the Canucks, and I think ownership has a lot of really tough decisions, or some people would say they're easy decisions, but a lot of decisions that they need to make.
You also got Ian Clark, Vasily Podkolzin, the Seattle expansion draft, RFAs, UFAs, Jake Virtanen. There's a lot of pieces and a very tight cap. So after this next couple episodes, we'll start really focusing more on what is going to be coming up in the offseason. In the meantime, there are still games to be played. And really, it's just about evaluating some of these kids, isn't it? I mean, we've now had a few games out of Jack Rathbone, who we'll talk about a bit later as well. And we've got Gadjevic up with the team. Hopefully we'll see him soon. Will Lockwood is being called up. So really, it is nice at least to get to see some of these faces. But that last game last night against Winnipeg was quite forgettable at least.
Yeah, I think you're coming to the end of the season, and I think this team's tired. I mean, again, we'll talk about this a little bit later as well, but there's reports for the last 2 days of several prominent Canucks players not wanting to go to the Worlds to play for Team USA, and I'm guessing it's just fatigue, and I don't think any of the players really want to think about or play hockey right now. I think a lot of them want to spend time with their families and just, you know, unwind, and it's totally reasonable.
So coming up on the episode today, we're going to talk a bit about our expansion cousins, the Buffalo Sabres, and everything going on over there. We'll talk a bit more about Connor McDavid. give you some playoff predictions. I know the West division hasn't been settled yet, so we're just going to pretend with the West and see what we end up with. A bit of the coaches carousel going on around the league, and the Canucks moving their farm team over to Abbotsford, as well as a few other bits and pieces from around the Canucks universe. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Pete_Gass, and we also have the podcast at Canucks Speak.
Give me a follow on Twitter at Doug Venn. And as always, Pete and I are building this ever-growing outro playlist on Spotify. It's the Canucks Outro Playlist. Make sure you give that a follow on Spotify. Some really cool, groovy tunes on there.
So, Doug, let's start it off here with some around the room this episode.
I think you're going to want to hear this.
No, I'm just playing. I'm having fun here at the hockey game.
And we're going to start it off, like I said, with our expansion cousins, the Buffalo Sabres. And man, there's so many similarities historically between the Canucks and the Sabres. There's just years of pain, a half a century of pain on both sides for various reasons. I do feel that the Canucks and Sabres are in slightly different situations right now, and I do feel that there is at least right now a bit more hope on the Canucks side than the Sabres side, with all the news coming out of there with both Jack Eichel and Sam Reinhart possibly being on the move out of Buffalo. I'm going to squash any rumors of thinking the Canucks are going to get either of those players. They're just not in a position to get those players. I mean, I've seen some trade proposals out there where it's like the idea of you give up more and more assets, it's going to make Jack Eichel more appealing. I mean, you can give up all the Jimmy Vesey's in the world, and that's not going to get you a Jack Eichel. So just on your end, do you think, first of all, either one of these guys is going to get traded? And if so, do you think they have a dance partner somewhere?
I definitely think Eichel will be traded. He's not coming to Vancouver, folks. Petey for Eichel isn't happening. Read a little bit into this injury Eichel's been dealing with all season. You know, it's a disc injury in his neck. I would be a little bit apprehensive to trade for a player like that, with an injury like Eichel's. I see the Rangers makes a lot of sense. They have a lot of assets that can facilitate a trade. And the other team that I've heard people throw out there that makes a lot of sense to me, and they definitely have the assets as well, is the LA Kings. Those are two teams, big market teams in the U.S. as well, that I could definitely see a trade happen between Buffalo and either the Kings or the Rangers.
Those are definitely the most popular opinions. I'm with you on both. I actually think the Kings might be a little bit more likely than the Rangers. The Rangers are going to have to get set up here in the next year or two to have cap space. And while they do have cap space at the moment, I think it might be a little bit easier for the Kings. They're in a slightly better situation. Dark horse for me with Eichel, don't rule out the Devils. I think the Devils or the Wings, either one of them could make a splash. They both have assets and picks as well. With the Canucks, it just won't happen. I mean, the first chip that would need to fall would be a first-round pick, and the Canucks aren't in a situation to give up any more first-round picks.
Yeah, I think I heard someone put out there, you know, would you give up a first and like JT Miller or a first and maybe Bo Horvat? For me personally, I do think Eichel is a good player and he's probably worth that. But I don't know if that'll make the Canucks that much better than what they currently are. And Eichel has had issues staying healthy these last few years. You know, this is what I think 3 of the last 4 years, Eichel's sustained pretty significant injuries and has missed significant time for the Buffalo Sabres. And again, I could be wrong on that, but I'm fairly certain he's missed quite a bit of time in the last 3-4 years. I would be very reluctant to give up the assets required to get a player like Eichel. Reinhart is interesting. Again, I don't think he's an upgrade on any of the talent we'd have to give up in order to get him. I think it's more of a lateral move. If you could maybe trade JT Miller 1-for-1 for Reinhart, you know, maybe that's something you'd look at. But again, I feel like that's more of a lateral move than a move moving forward. I also think the Canucks, they need a 3C, and you're not going to give up the assets to get a player like Reinhart to play your third line center. And they also need help on the right side of their defense, and Reinhart isn't that. The other guy who also had some comments about whether or not he sees himself as a fit long-term in Buffalo is Ristolainen. I know a lot of the analytics crew say that, you know, he's not great analytically. However, I do think he did have a very solid year for Buffalo, considering how bad they were this year. And he did make some strides and some improvements on his underlining numbers.
The thing with a Miller for Reinhardt swap that doesn't work for Buffalo's side is that Miller is 3 years older than Reinhardt. And while their salaries are almost exactly the same and they can both play center in the wing, it just wouldn't make sense for that. And even if, you know, I know teams always overvalue their own players. We're certainly guilty of that in Vancouver, but I don't know if Horvat and a first would actually get it done for Eichel. I think that's kind of a starting point, but I think there would still maybe have to be a bit more in there. As with Ristolainen, I'm not as keen on the guy. It just seems that every year there's Ristolainen rumors. And yeah, he's a right-hand D, he's 26, but he's also UFA after next year. So it makes it, acquiring a guy with a $5.4 million cap hit who's UFA, giving up any sort of significant assets to that. And yeah, I know the Canucks need help on their right side, but without money going out, like a Nate Schmidt or someone, you can't really be bringing in a $5-plus million at the moment.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. It's just, like you said, he is a name that has been bounted about quite a bit. I know the Canucks apparently were kind of sniffing around about a year and a half ago on Ristolainen when there were some rumors there. It's interesting. I just look at the Canucks in the future, the right side at the moment. They don't have a lot. I know a lot of Canucks fans, a lot of the draftists out there are hoping for a Brant Clark to be available at this year's draft for the Canucks. I've seen him go as high as second overall, and I've seen him drop as far as 10th. So I think it really depends on the teams in the top 10 and what their needs are heading into the draft. It is a pretty wide open draft this year. Ristolainen, again, it's all about acquisition cost. If you can get him for a reasonable value, then I could definitely see, you know, some interest from the Canucks. I think Buffalo's probably looking at blowing everything up outside of Dahlin. I'd imagine everybody will be available in Buffalo. And Kirby Dach. I don't see them trading Dach either.
Doesn't Dach play in Chicago?
Cousins. I would get Dach and Cousins mixed up. Cousins.
Same era, though, those guys. Yeah, I think there's definitely some changes that are going to be happening in Buffalo. All the writing's on the wall. I think Eichel is gone as well. And let's talk about, let's switch from Buffalo, though, over to the situation in Edmonton. And this going from a negative to a positive. So we got to see Connor McDavid on full display this last week. And I mean, what he's doing and the clip he's scoring at, getting close to 2 points a game, I never thought that we would see this type of scoring rate again in the NHL. This is coming off of a decade or two where if a player hit 100, it was a rarity. There were seasons where players didn't hit 100. And now you're looking at a guy who, if he was playing a full 82-game season, would be looking at 160 points. It's just crazy. I mean, he's averaging well over an assist a game. What do you make of McDavid? I mean, skill-wise and talent-wise, all of a sudden, he is now elevated into this rare echelon of players, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, just the sheer dominance McDavid has had over the North Division this year and the competition is just, you know, it's record-setting. It really is, especially in this era of hockey, you know, where the goalies are so much better than they were in the 90s and 80s. There's more defensive structure to the game. It's extremely impressive. I know you just see McDavid, and you could tell he really, really was pushing to get the 100 points, right? And good on him, but he was really gunning to get it. And of course, another record gets set. Well, I don't know if it's a record, but, you know, a milestone, we'll call it, gets set against the Canucks. You know, Gretzky scoring his, 800th goal to pass Howe or whatever, 812th goal, I think it was, to pass Howe. It just, all these records always seem to happen against the Canucks for one reason or another.
I did a hit on Sportsnet 650 this week, and I said that as well. It's like, you know, it always seems, especially with Oilers players, it happens against the Canucks. At least there was no stopping the game in a ceremony or anything this time, like when Gretzky hit 8:02, but there's a part of us that almost becomes numb to it. And I mean, the ceremony last night with Paul Stastny, that was nice, but still, I'm just kind of chuckling to myself. I'm like, 1,000th game, like, here we go. We're probably going to lose this one as well.
Yeah, I mean, that made a little bit more sense because the game was in Winnipeg, but again, there's no fans in the stadium. Stastny's, you know, played, bounced around the league quite a bit. I know he played quite a bit of time in Colorado. I believe he played in St. Louis for a while as well. This is his second tour of duty with the Jets. So I get it. But yeah, without fans in the stadiums, it's, you know, those weird little celebrations you have are, you know, they don't really, they're not as meaningful. I guess they're meaningful to the player, but, you know, it doesn't have the same impact, I'm sure, when you don't have 20,000 fans screaming and hollering, cheering you on.
So McDavid's scoring clip as well this year, and this may not sound that amazing when I say it, but is 22nd all-time right now in points per game per season, all-time. Now, the first 16 of those are all Gretzky and Lemieux, and there's no one else even close to that scoring clip in the modern era. I mean, the players just above Connor McDavid is Bill Cowley, who played for the Bruins in the 40s. Phil Esposito, Gretzky again, Yzerman, and Bernie Nichols. When Bernie Nichols, that must have been his monster 150-point year or whatever it was, before Connor McDavid here. But, like, there is no one even close. 1.889 points per game. It's incredible. So, like, for me, I just can't help but think of hockey pools next year, and whoever gets the number one pick in any pool is going to have a huge advantage right off the bat.
Jágr didn't have a year where he was clipping almost 2 points a game?
He's close. Jágr's highest one is 27th. He has a 1.817, so he's close to McDavid. And, of course, McDavid could move around a bit, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Oilers sit him for at least one of these last couple games. But, yeah, Jágr's dotted around in there. But, I mean, the look at the names around him as well, Guy Lafleur, Pat LaFontaine, Bobby Orr, Mike Bossy, Brian Trottier. Like, it's again, though, it's different eras. And what he's doing in this era is pretty incredible, and we really saw that on full display, and I'm not even really mad about it. It's just it's incredible to watch, and I, you know, all the best to McDavid. I'm curious to see what he does in the playoffs here.
Well, I even look at a guy like Tyson Barrie, who had an awful year with the Toronto Maple Leafs last year. There was rumors that he could sign in Vancouver, and he ended up signing in Edmonton, and I know that signing was, a lot of people thought that was a terrible signing, but you look at the bounce back year Barry's had, and sure, a lot of it is getting to play on the power play with McDavid. I know when Tyson Barrie comes into his contract negotiations, he better be throwing McDavid a little bonus, because I'm sure he's going to be getting an extra couple million on his next contract because of the season he's got to play with McDavid.
You could also say a lot for Jesse Puljujarvi and Kyler Yamamoto as well. And Ryan McLeod has looked good for the Oilers as well, who's only played 9 games. I know he doesn't have a lot of points yet, but he's looked like he could be something as well. That's a good lead-in, though, to doing our early playoff predictions here. By the time we record again, the playoffs was started, so I wanted to get this in on this episode and just kind of wing it a bit here. I haven't given this too much thought myself, but let's just get into it, and let's start with that series, with the Jets-Oilers. Judging by what I've seen out of both those teams recently, I'm going to pick the Oilers in this one. I'm going to say Oilers in 6. I just think that with the way that the top guns for the Oilers are going right now, and they're getting the goaltending, Winnipeg has had some trouble scoring goals lately, and they've got a few health issues. I'm going to take the Oilers in this series.
I know Paul Maurice benched Mark Scheifele recently, and that didn't seem to go over well. The team really hasn't played well. Pierre-Luc Dubois really hasn't made that much of an impact. I think that a lot of fans and NHL pundits around the league thought he would. Let's see how they go into the playoffs, but I'm with you, Pete. I think the Oilers are hot right now. McDavid is firing in all cylinders, and, you know, kudos to Mike Smith. The guy's, what, 38 years old, and he's playing some of the best hockey he's played in nearly a decade.
How many games for the Oilers?
I'm going to say they do it in 6 games.
All right, well, we're certainly, neither one of us is going to be stepping on any toes there. We both take Oilers in 6. Habs, Leafs. I'm taking Habs in this one, and I know people will say that it's because I hate the Leafs, and you're probably right, But I don't know. I just thinking if Carey Price gets hot, Montreal has the D, and I just, you know, I'm so used to Toronto fails in the first round, so I'm going to take Habs in seven for this one.
I'm going to go with the Leafs. I think the Leafs in seven as well, but I do think the Leafs find a way to beat the Habs in this playoff series. I think they have more depth, top to bottom, more scoring depth, and I think despite some of their goaltending questions heading into the playoffs this year, I do think the Leafs will edge out the Canadiens.
Islanders and Penguins is set in stone. I've long had the Islanders as my backup team here. I'm not sure if they can pull it off. I'm going to take the Islanders, though, just because they're the only other team besides the Habs that I'm really rooting for in this first round. But I think it's going to be a tough series, and it's really going to come down to goaltending and what sort of system the Islanders play here. But I'm going to take the Islanders over the Penguins also in seven.
I'm going to the Penguins over the Islanders in five. I think the Pens, this is going to be one of their last real runs at another cup. The core of Gino, Crosby, and who's the defenseman? I always forget his name.
Letang.
Letang, thank you. So I think the Pens are primed to try to make a real run for one last push at another cup with this core.
Capitals and Bruins. I think this will be a really fun series to watch. I'm looking forward to this one. I kind of have gone back and forth with who I'm going to take here, but I am going to go with the Caps. I think it'll also be a seven-game series. I really like the Caps' top lines. Boston has been at times pretty reliant on the primary scoring this year. I also have a couple question marks about their blue line and goaltending, but I think they're the type of team that's going to play Washington hard. The teams don't like each other. I think it's going to be a fun series, but I'm going to take Caps in this one.
I'm with you, Pete. I think the Caps take it in six. I think they have more depth top to bottom in their lineup. I also think the Bruins are, I know he's not the player he used to be, but I also think the Bruins not having Chara in this playoff series is really going to show, and it's really going to hurt them. So yeah, I'm with you, man. I think the Caps take it in six, however.
The Zdeno Chara storyline is fascinating in that one as well. I really like this. Hurricanes Predators. This is something just personally. I'm very excited for this series. I've always wanted to see Carolina and Nashville in the same division. I'm very biased because I have a cousin down in North Carolina, and I've spent some time in Tennessee. And a couple of years ago, I did a little road trip from Tennessee into North Carolina. They're right there. It makes sense for them to be geographical rivals. So to get them in the playoffs is great. However, I think the Preds are very much in over their heads in this series. I think Carolina is rolling. They got a great blue line. They've got great offense. They've got Sebastian Aho, who is just killing it this year. Has been playing great. They got Rod Brindamore. I'm going to give the Hurricanes in five for this one.
I say the Hurricanes sweep the Predators. I think it's a four-game sweep. The Hurricanes, in my opinion, spoiler alert, are my favorite to win the Cup this year.
Well, if Nashville wins that one, we're both going to look pretty stupid. So I guess I'll have to cheer for the Canes. Another series, like this division for me has worked out really well. We finally get the Battle of Florida as well. The Panthers and the Lightning. And I don't know, man, this is a tough one, but I'm going to go with Tampa in this one. I think I've gone back and forth a bit, but Tampa has a lot of bodies coming back. Kucherov and Stamkos are skating again. But I think Florida is going to play them really tough. I'm hoping for a seven-game series, so I'm going to go Lightning in seven.
It's going to be pretty incredible if Florida can pull off the victory against Tampa Bay with arguably their best player missing in Aaron Ekblad. And I think Florida can do it. I really do. I know Kucherov and Stamkos are skating again. Kucherov has missed the entire year. And I think for him to kind of get back into game shape and to get caught up with the speed of the game in a intense playoff series against the Panthers, I think he's going to be off a step or two. I really do. And I'm taking the Panthers in six to take out Tampa Bay.
Hey, it's not a bad pick. I originally, when I was looking at it this morning, I was thinking Panthers. I've gone back and forth, but I'm now on the record with the Lightning. Maybe some playoff experience there helps as well. Lastly, it's the West Division, which is not set in stone, but we're just going to speculate as to what happens here. So let's say it's Vegas and St. Louis right now is how it would go. I'm all about the Knights in this series again. And this one, I think, could actually be a sweep. Vegas just, they're strong on so many levels. They've got some of their top guys. Mark Stone is just producing at a great clip this year. Pacioretty's had a good year. They're deep. They're a very deep team. They got the goaltending and the experience. I'm going to call this one a sweep for Vegas.
I'm going to go with you. I think the Vegas Golden Knights defeat the St. Louis Blues if they do indeed end up playing. And I think Vegas does it in five games. I give the Blues one game.
I thought about that, but I think Vegas has that. Colorado, Minnesota. I think this is going to be a hella fun series as well. Minnesota certainly overachieved this year in some people's eyes. They've got the Calder Trophy winner. In my opinion, I think Kaprizov's going to win it. Colorado, of course, stacked team. They've got all sorts of talent all over the place. I'm going to give it to Colorado. It's going to be a battle of a series, but I'm going to say Avalanche in six for this one.
Yeah, it's really hard to go against Colorado with all the high-end talent they have. They still have questions in goal, in my opinion, but I agree with you. I do think Colorado pulls this series off in six games as well.
Yeah, we agreed on the first one we did and the last one we did. That wasn't even planned. How about that? Lastly, we're kind of going to take this from around the room into the Canucks talk because there's definitely a good lead into this, but there's been the coaching carousel in the NHL has already started. We've seen Tortorella. We've seen Brind'Amour re-signed, which has implications here in Vancouver. Rick Tocchet, now Dan Quinn as well, as of today with the Rangers. The Rangers completing the sweep of their entire office and staff. What do you think of these moves for those teams? So that's pertaining to the Jackets, the Canes, the Yotes, and the Rangers. And then, how does that affect the Travis Green situation here in Vancouver?
Well, I think the one that definitely affects Green is the Brind'Amour situation. And I still don't think it's official yet. I know a lot of media members are speculating what the dollar figure is and that it is going to get done. It just hasn't officially been announced by the team yet. I think Brind'Amour has always been the comp of ownership, Vancouver ownership for Green. And it looks like Brind'Amour's taken less money than what I think a lot of people think he would have got normally. I believe the report was $1.8 million per, where I think a lot of people thought Brind'Amour could, you know, easily get, you know, upwards of $2-$2.5 million if he decided to go to a different team. I don't think Brind'Amour ever really wanted to leave Carolina. I think he's always wanted to stay in Carolina. Obviously, he won a cup in Carolina. I believe he has a home there. So I think that is the one that definitely affects the Green negotiations the most. Tortorella, I mean, you and I have been speculating for months now that I think Tortorella is done in Columbus, and obviously it's official now. Tocchet, I mean, Arizona, like, sometimes I forget they're even a franchise. You know what I mean? Like, it's just...
Oh, totally.
You feel bad for them in some regard. You know, they are originally the former Winnipeg Jets, right? They were moved to Arizona. And then obviously there was the Atlanta Thrashers, who are now the incarnation of today's Winnipeg Jets. So you do feel bad for them. Tocchet, by all accounts, I think did an okay job. But what are the real aspirations and goals of Arizona, right? Like, I know obviously it is to make the playoffs. But do they have the pieces? I would say no. They're a meddling team. I do think Tocchet will probably end up with a job somewhere down the line. You know, I could see Tocchet in New York, to be honest. Although the Rangers, I could also see them wanting to swing for the fences and get a big name coach. I don't know, like a Mike Babcock or a Bruce Boudreaux or someone like that.
Boudreaux with the Rangers, I think, could make a lot of sense. But you do need a coach over in New York who's really good with young players. I'm not sure if Boudreaux would be the exact right fit there. Tortorella, for me, easy choice. I think he's there for 6 years or so. I think his future is going to be in TV from here. I don't think he's going to coach anymore. I think he's going to end up on ESPN or TNT, and I'm all for that. I think that would be great. I'm looking forward to seeing what the U.S. broadcasters do with hockey, but bringing in some guys like that could hopefully change what I feel is a very stale image that NBC is being portraying. Rick Tocchet, yeah, whatever. I mean, the Yotes finished fifth in their division. They missed the playoffs. But I'm kind of with you. One thing with the Coyotes, though, this year, Jacob Chychrun did lead the NHL in defenseman goals, which he almost hit 20. I believe he had 18 of them. And that's something that has flown very much under the radar, just what a breakout year he's had. And probably part of the reason why the Coyotes were looking at trading OEL or limitedly trading OEL in the offseason is because they could see the emergence of him. And he's now their number one defenseman over there. Quinn in New York, yeah, that just kind of completes the cycle there in New York. The writing was kind of on the wall with that one. Brendan Moore wanting to stay in Carolina is the big thing. Is he did take a discount to stay there. He's married to a local woman. He does have a house down there. The Carolinas aren't a bad place to be, as I've kind of alluded to before. It's a pretty decent spot in the States for the most part. Comparing that to other coaches, it does create a weird barometer, because you know that, and this will lead us into the Travis Green stuff here, is that you know that the Green camp already had a number in mind, and now the Canucks still say, well, you can't be making more than Brindamore, and that's the 1.8. But another major difference is there that both sides wanted to get the deal done, and they got the deal done. And you're hearing that in Vancouver, is that Benning wants him to stay, and Benning has said that, and Green has said that he wants to stay. So there's a holdup here. There's something that it's a very strange situation right now in Vancouver. Is you got all these coaches who are coming up to expiring deals, and you've got a GM who may or may not be back, depending on what you believe and what you think. So what is the holdup here? Is it money? Is it that the Canucks do want to move on but haven't said anything? I mean, there's not a lot of trust in the organization right now from the fans. So it gets the rumor mill swirling even further. I mean, it's been swirling all season, let's be honest.
Do you think if Green doesn't have a contract before the end of the season that he's gone?
I think there's a good chance. I think the longer this goes on, and I mean, now re-signing him would be kind of weird timing anyways. I mean, the team's being eliminated, so it'd be kind of weird to sign him with 5 games left at this point. So I think it's going to go until the end of the season, but I do think the longer it goes, it makes it harder. And I don't know if Green is saying, hey, if I stay, I want the coaches around me to stay, and maybe the team is saying, you know, you can keep some, but we want to make some changes with the assistants. You know, Ian Clark is a guy who I'm sure every Canucks fan wants to keep. There's a love for Ian Clark akin to the love of Judd Brackett when he was the head scout here. And I mean, Ian Clark's work is undeniable, and he's regarded as being maybe the best goaltending coach in the world. So of course the Canucks should try and keep him. So I do think the longer this goes on, the harder it's going to be, because I feel like if this was something that the Canucks want, the GM wants, and Green wants, this would have been done in the offseason before the season even started.
Well, especially coming out of the bubble and how successful the team was and how much they overachieved. I mean, to me, that seemed like the most optimum time to give Green an extension and reward him for how well the team played in the bubble last year. Elliot Friedman on the most recent 31 Thoughts, he was talking about the Canucks, and he had some interesting, I guess, observations about the franchise. And he was just saying, you know, Vancouver's very strange. At times it looks like they kind of go day by day and they don't have a plan and they're really watching their money. And then another day, boom, they're signing Tanner Pearson to an extension that most people thought was a little bit richer than they should have. There doesn't seem to be a plan. You know, one day they're watching their pennies, the next day they're shelling out money in kind of a, you know, unfrugal way, so to speak. And yeah, I do think a lot of it is ownership. I do think Jim Benning wants to keep Travis Green. And for whatever reason, Aquilini won't sign the deal, or maybe Green's camp is coming in too high and Aquilini doesn't want to sign him for that price.
I mean, to say that there's a lot of disconnect or confusing things coming out of the Canucks is an understatement. You know, the Pearson contract is a great example of that. And this is on the tail end of laying off a bunch of staff this offseason. And all of a sudden, Tanner Pearson is coming back on what is an above market value contract, in my opinion. And this is something that Canucks have repeatedly done. It looked like when they were bringing in some of these cheaper bodies like Hauerluck and Boyd and VC, and I know that we've kind of got the new Sia Granlunds and not all of them have worked out, but any reasonable Canucks fan could look at these guys playing in the bottom six and be like, hey, these guys are just as effective, if not more effective, than some of the vets we have, and they're a third of the price. And it looked like the writing was on the wall that, hey, maybe the Canucks have finally realized we can round out the roster like Toronto does with some guys on under $1 million deals. And then Pearson gets paid above market value on a 3-year deal. Look, I don't know what the Canucks are doing right now with the coaching front. And I mean, there's a lot of different holes that need to be plugged on this team. There's a lot of issues going into the offseason, from cap management to expansion drafts to the actual draft to figuring out if you can weaponize things and think creatively, which is something that the team hasn't really done a lot of in the past. And that's where, like, for me, it's okay. Like Travis Green, yeah, there's pros and cons with Travis Green. There are times this year where I just really didn't like his player deployment. I didn't like how he's using some of the young guys. That's been a knock on him a lot. But I do think that's kind of in his position. He's a bit of a lame duck coach right now. He was still playing for wins. And now as the season's gone on and you've got this ridiculous schedule to end out the season, you're going to see more young bodies in there. From all accounts as well, during the pandemic, Green has been really good with his players and his team, and they've really appreciated him. So I don't know if Green is necessarily the problem. I won't cry if he's not brought back. I think, you know, it's not the end of the world for me, and we've said this before. The bigger problems is, what is the direction and why is there no one as a buffer between the GM and the owner right now?
Yeah, I agree. I think right now this team is in desperate need of a president of hockey operations, a guy that can speak to the media, answer the tough questions, and kind of be the figurehead. We've been saying this for what feels like half a year now. With Green, I mean, I think the writing's on the wall. I do think he's gone. I don't think he'll be back. I agree with you. I haven't loved a lot of his deployment throughout the year. He likes to play an up-tempo style of game, which is fine, but I don't know if this team is ready with the assets they currently have on the roster to play that style of hockey. I think they need to kind of take a step back before they can take those two steps forward, and I do think they need to play a bit more of a defensive minded game first and then start adding that offensive flair. We saw that with Alain Vigneault with the Canucks in the mid-2000s there. That obviously ended up going to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final. When Vigneault first got here, you know, there was a lot of offensive talent on that team. You had the Sedins, Kessler, Burrows, and he got them to play defense first for a couple of years and understand defensive structure before he started getting them to open up their offensive side of the game. And I think that is something that Green hasn't done with the Canucks during his tenure, unfortunately.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens after this next week or so. Of course, I think our next podcast will be right towards the end of the season, so maybe something will have happened there. But I think there's a lot of coaches out there, and maybe the Canucks are looking to see what the other options are and what other teams are doing. Maybe they have someone in mind. One thing I've seen is, what if Travis Green was to be named the coach of Seattle? Wouldn't that be something?
And you know what? It makes sense. Seattle, and then the other one is Anaheim. Green leaves in Anaheim. There's lots of speculation. I forget who the coach is. He used to coach the Oilers, Mr. Fitness. Anyways, there's lots of speculation that Dallas Eakins, that's it. There's lots of speculation that Eakins is going to be gone at the end of this year, and Green would be a fit there. I think Green could potentially be a fit, like you said, in Seattle. Wouldn't that be something to have Green in Seattle? But yeah, I mean, regardless of what happens, Green's going to have options. You know, he'll have a job. Again, I think he'll be one of the first guys hired if his services aren't retained by the Canucks. I really do.
Yeah, and again, I mean, I don't think the coaching is the biggest problem, like I said. And we're not going to get into it this episode. We're going to have a lot of time this offseason to really get into how the Canucks need to think creatively and outside the box, which is something that they've generally shown reluctance to do for whatever reason under this regime, and what is some of our takes for what the Canucks need to do this offseason. But we're not going to get into that this episode because we just don't have enough time. One thing that did happen, switching off of Travis Green, right after we recorded our last episode, literally about 5 minutes after, got the notification that the Canucks are moving their farm team from Utica to Abbotsford. This is something for myself. I'm super stoked on this. It's something I've wanted for years. When the Abbotsford Heat were there, I was like, you know, why did Calgary get into that market? And then now for the Canucks to finally move it. A lot of NHL teams are doing it. This year, it really shows the importance of having a team close and in the area and on this side of the border. Any negatives to this move on your end, Doug?
No, I mean, not at all. I think having your farm team that close proximity to the NHL club is vastly important. I mean, you could see how much it handcuffed the Canucks this year. And obviously, there's a pandemic going on, but even still, they're in New York. You know what I mean? They're in upstate New York. It's just like, it doesn't make sense that they're three time zones away from the Canucks.
And there's generally, for the AHL, it used to be very east driven, and that is changing more and more. I mean, you've got Winnipeg's team in Winnipeg, which is, you know, a little bit west, and Colorado's doing the same. Edmonton's down in California. I know there's a few others out there. Who else? There's the Kings. I know they've got a team down in California as well, and I know I'm forgetting a few with this, but there is a bit more of a migration of teams coming west. You know, you mentioned the Ducks. I know the San Diego Gulls are affiliated with them, and I think Calgary and San Jose are also there. So there is now at least a few more teams coming to the West Coast. Yeah, no negatives for me. I think they're going to bring in tons of fans from the Valley who want to see that. It's going to be really important for the team now, I feel, to really look at structuring that team with players that they draft. I think that'll be a lot more interesting to fans. I don't want it to be a team where there's only a handful of draft picks and a lot of guys are just brought in on one-year deals and there's a turnover. I think it's going to be really important for that team and for the Canucks to make sure that every year from every draft, there's a couple players who are lined up, either depending on where they are, whether they're eligible next year or in 2 years or whatever. It's going to be really important for them to make sure they have a cycle of players that continuously go into that organization every year. I think that's one of the keys to success, because I know that there's a lot more interest in BC, and maybe this is just me, and but I think that there's a lot more interest in seeing the developing prospects as opposed to the amateur pro players who aren't quite NHL caliber.
Yeah, I also think just being able to go there and watch games from management perspective, right? For Jim Benning to be able to just go to Abbotsford and watch the game, and well, whoever the GM's going to be able to go to Abbotsford and watch some of the prospects play in person, as opposed to watching highlights from Utica. Or if they did want to go see some of the prospects in Utica, they would literally have to fly halfway across the country to do so. And I also think the communication and the dialogue between the coaches, you know, between the big club coach and the AHL coach, and, you know, being able to maybe share game tape a lot easier and stuff like that. Yeah, it's a win-win. And it's great for the Fraser Valley. I think it's great for the Canucks, and it's great for the fan base.
And it's also an opportunity to scout other teams' AHL players as well. So there's definitely some benefits to that. Speaking of prospects, and I wanted to talk a bit more about Jack Rathbone, because I tweet about this guy all the time. As you know, since the Canucks drafted him, I've always been a big fan of Rathbone's game, his story, and I think he has looked very much in place with the Canucks so far. He hasn't looked out of place. He's a great skater, and he adds all of a sudden another dimension to the blue line. It was really fun watching him and Hughes work that power play the other day.
Yeah, I've been very impressed with Rathbone. He definitely looks the most NHL competent of all the players we've seen at near the end of the year. I mean, Lind has looked okay at times, but, you know, he also definitely disappears in the sea of Granlunds. We still haven't seen Gadjevich. Who knows if we'll get to see Lockwood. I've liked at times what I've seen from Jalen Chatfield, but definitely Rathbone looks like a keeper, man. He looks like a everyday NHL player, and he looks like a steal for the Canucks. I think they got him in the fourth or fifth round.
Yeah.
He's got a really good shot. And yeah, you know what? Kudos to Travis Green for playing Rathbone on the first unit power play with Quinn Hughes as well. I know for what almost 2 years, the Canucks have been going with one defenseman and four forwards. I actually like the way the power play looked with the Rathbone, Hughes, and then whatever three forwards they were deciding to put out there, whether that was Horvat, Besser, and Miller. I know Pearson got a little bit of time up there, as did Hoglander. I thought it looked really good, and I think Rathbone looks like he's solidifying his spot on the team next year. What does that mean for a player like Olli Juolevi? Do the Canucks and will the Canucks want to start three defensemen on their left side of Hughes, Rathbone, and Juolevi heading into next year? I have doubts about that, but who knows?
Oh, you stole my question for you there. I was thinking the same thing, because I don't think any casual hockey fan could look at what they've seen out of Rathbone in his five games and say that he's not NHL ready. He's got a goal and an assist in the five games as well. He's getting more and more ice time. He's getting power play time, as we've talked about. For me, Rathbone is a lock in the top six on the left side. And you're right, then, with the left side, this does beg some questions as to what you are doing with Olli Juolevi and Alex Edler in particular. And I think there is a chance that both those guys come back next year. I really do. I think there's a, you know, I don't think there's much of a market for Olli Juolevi right now. The Canucks are in a position where they could leave Juolevi exposed, depending on what they do with weaponizing roster spots, because the Canucks do have the ability right now to upgrade their forwards and their defensemen before Seattle. So, I mean, right now, yes, Juolevi is penciled in as a protected spot, but it doesn't need to be.
Yeah, I think the Canucks should be trying to weaponize their situation heading into the expansion draft and hopefully take advantage of a team that could potentially lose a serviceable defenseman for nothing. I don't have confidence in this current management group to do so. I know there's a lot of talk, like, why should the Canucks leave or protect Tyler Myers. I even if you don't protect Myers, I don't see the crack in taking him. So it's kind of a moot point. But yeah, the other person is Nate Schmidt. Schmidt's a left-handed defenseman as well. I know he can play the right, and he's predominantly played the right the last few seasons here in Vancouver, and then obviously his time in Vegas. But, you know, he's a guy that could also play the left side. And, you know, what happens if you want him to be play on your left side next year? Then you have maybe Schmidt, Rathbone, and Hughes. You still need to find another person to play your right side. That, again, the spots for Juolevi and Edler don't seem as likely.
It's going to be interesting. We'll have a lot of time in the offseason to discuss this, but I think Rathbone is in the starting six next year, and if he's not, then there's some real failures by some people in charge of this team. A couple of quick hits here on a few things just to round out the conversations before we get into the free pour. We mentioned earlier in the episode about the World Cup of Hockey. The Canucks have four American players who would likely be U.S. Olympians, really, or at least certainly be in the discussion. You know, you got Besser, Miller, Hughes, and Demko. I mean, all four of those guys would make a very good case to be on a U.S. Olympic team, certainly on a U.S. World Cup team. None of them are going. However, Mikey DiPietro is going for Team Canada, so that is great. Personally, I'm not surprised at all by any of those Americans not going after the season they've had. DiPietro, it makes sense just to get some time in. Whether he gets any games in or not remains to be seen, but at least he'll be getting a little bit more work done this season.
Yeah, I'm not surprised that Besser, Miller, Demko, and Hughes have all turned down the invitation to play for the U.S. at the Worlds. It's been a long season, I think, the Canucks, especially with the amount of games they've had to play in such a short amount of time. It's really taken its toll on this team and these players. And I think a lot of these guys just want to walk, get away from the rink and just kind of unwind and enjoy being close to their families and the ones that they love. There's also some speculation and rumors that maybe Rathbone might get an invite to the U.S. team, which would be great. I mean, who knows what kind of a role he would have on the team, but that would be great for his development, because he also was on the taxi squad for, what, almost half the season before they decided to send him down to Utica. And then, yeah, Mikey DiPietro, I know he's the third goalie on Team Canada, but you know what? I mean, that experience alone is great, and the fact that he even got the call is great. And you know what? You know, he probably will only get, like, one game in that tournament. It'll probably be, like, the first, I guess, round-robin games or whatever it is. So I don't expect him to play much unless there's an injury, but kudos to him.
Yeah, if Rathbone goes, that would make a bit more sense to me, considering what he's played this this season. That would make sense. But the other guys, doesn't really work for me. Yeah, congrats to Mikey DiPietro. I really do like that he's getting that experience. And there's also something to be said for the Canucks having a bit of a break after this. And yeah, guys getting away from it all, getting refreshed. And just this season, I think everyone on this team is just like, let's put this in the rearview mirror, wipe the slate clean, and get back to it in the off season. So congrats to Mikey DiPietro. A couple more quick hits here. Zach MacEwen, one game suspension. Did you have any issue with that?
It's funny, when I first saw the replay, I didn't see why he was getting suspended, and it wasn't until like the last little moment there where you do see him kind of put his knee out a little bit. I don't know if it actually made contact with Darnell Nurse, but the fact that he seemed to extend the knee out to try and hit him, yeah, it's probably worth the suspension in my mind.
I'm exactly with you. I thought it was for the first hit. I didn't see the knee on the second one. Whatever, I'm not losing any sleep over it. It is what it is. Yeah, the one game is fine. Madison Bowie, is he a Canuck?
I don't know, man. He's the international man of mystery right now. I totally forgot he was on the team until I saw someone. I think it might have been Sat or someone, you know, mentioned him. I'm like, oh shit, I totally forgot Bowie's on the team. Like, I don't know. Like, do you think we'll even get to see him this year?
I think 5 games and 7 nights, you just roll all the guys and just, you know, mix it up so guys aren't, like, the Canucks look tired in that back-to-back against Winnipeg. There's really no reason in these back-to-back games you don't make, like, 8 lineup changes. I'm serious. Like, just completely change the lineup, put in some of the guys you really want to see. Like, obviously, I'd like to see Rathbone play at least 4 of these next 5, but I'd like to see Olevi in there, too. And Bowie's another guy, but keep rolling it, mixing the guys up so they aren't getting too tired. This is an audition for a lot of guys. We will be doing an episode in the next couple weeks with all the free agents the Canucks have and who they should bring back and who they shouldn't. But there's a lot of guys who need to audition here. Hopefully we see Bowie in at least a game down the stretch. I think we will.
Yeah, the other thing I'm hoping for is I'm hoping we get Edler his 100th goal with the Canucks. I know most Canuck fans, that's like the highlight of the remainder of the season, is maybe Edler can pot his 100th goal. So I don't want to see Edler ride the pine until he at least has a chance to score his 100th goal.
Yeah, I'm with that. Doug, your dog is making some noise there. So we're gonna get going with just a couple more things here, and then you can take the dog out so she can go and bite someone. I just wanted to make some comments about the 2017 draft, because I've tweeted about this a couple times. And from a Canucks perspective, the top 5 picks from that draft, Petey, Lind, Gadjevich, DiPietro, and Rathbone, right now it's looking like a pretty solid draft. Now, I put a few things out there on Twitter saying, hey, this looks like a good draft class for the Canucks. I didn't mention any names. I didn't mention Benning or Brackett or whatever. People took it, though. Some people took it. I shouldn't say people. But some people, as soon as they see that, it's like, oh, I'm defending Benning, or I'm defending Brackett or something. I'm not doing any of that. I'm just saying that the 5 guys that the Canucks took with their first 5 picks in that draft looks to be a solid class. Whoever picked them, I'm not arguing if it was Gradin or Delorme or Benning or whatever. The Canucks picked them. I'm happy with that. It's a good draft. I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah, I agree. Just refresh my memory. So it was Petey, I believe Lind, Rathbone. Who else was in that? And DiPietro?
Gadjevich and DiPietro.
Okay, yeah, that's right. So, I mean, look, all five of them look like they'll at least get a couple of NHL games. Well, I think all of them have played in the NHL now, except for Gadjevich. Yeah, it looks like a solid draft. Whether or not, you know, they're going to be career NHLers and you'll be able to get 500 games, 30-plus points out of guys on the bottom half of that draft, looking at you, Gadjevich, looking at you, Cole Lind, who knows? But, yeah, it looks like one of the stronger drafts for the Canucks during this regime.
And Petrus Palmu is a wild card at the end. I don't think we'll see him, but he was in that draft as well. But yes, I'm not trying to say, oh, this is pro Benning or anything else. All I'm saying when I say that is I like the look of this draft class. This is someone who, I love drafts. I love seeing what we get and how players develop. And the Canucks have historically not been very good. We don't need to get into those years like 2007 where we didn't have any NHL games out of a draft class. So that's all I'm saying is I like the look of that. Doug, let's take it into the free pour so you can take your dog for a walk.
It's that time of the episode. It's the free pour open floor segment. And I want to talk about a show that popped up on Amazon Prime called Invincible. It's a cartoon. It's another superhero cartoon. I know most people have superhero fatigue at the moment with all the Marvel movies. This isn't a Marvel comic. This isn't a DC comic. It's actually an Image comic. And it was written by the same guy who wrote The Walking Dead, Kirkman. Not a Walking Dead fan myself. Don't really like zombies. I find them kind of lame. I want my villains to have personality. Zombies literally have no personality. But this show, Invincible, on Amazon Prime, incredible. At least in my opinion. I really, really enjoyed it. You're going to watch the first episode and you're going to be like, okay, you know what, Doug? This seems okay. You know, I'm watching this. This seems like your typical, you know, animated kind of preteen television show. And then the last 10 minutes, there's a flip. And oh boy, is there ever a flip. And you're like, holy cow, I did not see this coming. And it just gets in amazing from there. I mean, I was enjoying it up until that point, but then it really sets the tone of what the series is actually going to be like. And I can't recommend it enough, especially if you enjoy cartoons and especially if you like superhero things.
Nice one. I don't have Amazon Prime, but I'll have to take your word for that. For me, I'm going to give a album recommendation. I've seen a few people out on Twitter lately saying how they're looking for music for studying or working or going to sleep to. There's an album that I have in steady rotation. It's one of my favorite kind of electronic down-tempo groups called Tosca. If you don't know Tosca, highly recommend checking them out. Richard Dorfmeister from Kruder and Dorfmeister fame is one of the two guys in this band. They have an album called Live at Odeon, and it's like an ambient album, and it just flows in the background. Great to fall asleep to, great to work to. It's just beautiful background music. Live at Odeon by Tosca. Really anything by Tosca. They're one of my favorites, like I said. But check that one out in particular if you need something to smoke a joint to, or to just, like I said, put on in the background while you're falling asleep or trying to concentrate. Excellent album. Go give it a shot. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Episode 73 is just about in the books. Thanks for sticking with us. I know we had a lot of stuff there that wasn't quite Canucks related, but there's a lot happening in the league right now, and there is a lot of stuff coming up with the Canucks. We're going to have a ton of content to talk about over the next little while because, yeah, this is going to be a really interesting stretch for team history.
Yeah, there's some major decisions that need to be made by ownership and management, if management will even still be in power. Obviously, you got the two big RFA re-signings the Canucks need to get done this year with Petey and Hughes. What are they going to do with some of the bottom six guys they were able to acquire via the waiver wire this year or via trade with Matthew Highmore and stuff like that? Like you said, the expansion draft coming up, the actual NHL draft coming up. It's going to be a very, very interesting offseason. And even though the Canucks didn't make the playoffs, there's going to be plenty of storylines to talk about.
Yeah, for sure. It's going to be a short offseason for us, I'm sure, with the way the season goes and the draft not until the end of July. It's going to be a lot to talk about. And hopefully we'll bring some guests on as well over that point as well to talk prospects and get some other opinions on the show as well. You can follow me. I am on Twitter. I'm at Pete_Gass. We also have the Canucks Speakeasy outro playlist going on Spotify. This track will be added on to that. I know I mentioned Tosca in my Freeport segment, but this is a much more kind of hip-hop, get-you-going kind of playlist. Give it a follow as well.
Give me a follow on Twitter at Doug Venn, and be sure to follow the podcast on Twitter at Canucks Speak. As always, thanks for listening.
Hasta luego.